Representative Boniz.
Here.
Representative Nicholas.
Here.
Representative Stubson.
Excuse
me. Senator Burns.
Here.
Senator Hastert.
Here.
Senator Perkins.
Here.
Senator Wasserberger.
Here.
Co-Chairman Ross.
Here.
Chairman Harshman.
Here. Okay, thank you. All right, members. We have Agency 151, the Laramie County District Attorney. We have a brand newly elected District Attorney, Jeremiah Sandberg, and Lynette, it's Chris. So if you guys could come on up and each have a seat, and if we could close that back door, we can get that, and then... And how we do this, we generally divide these agencies among the members of the committee, and I think this is Representative Burkhart in the House, and I think it's Senator Burns is on our list. We were just looking at it, and so they'll be kind of the guys that will be responsible on the floor to present it. Okay, so how we do this, if you would, we're live, and this is recorded and indexed, and so it's being broadcast live on the Internet, and... So when you, we'll have you introduce yourself for the record, and then go ahead and just take us through your budget proposal, and the floor is yours, so welcome.
Thank you. My name is Jeremiah Sandberg, and as you mentioned, I am the newly elected Laramie County District Attorney for the 1st Judicial District here in Cheyenne, Wyoming. This is a budget request that I inherited from the my predecessor. I know that the governor gave us the opportunity to review this and determine whether or not this is something that we wanted to proceed request or not. And I can tell you in the short time that I was in the office, and I'll back up a little bit, Mr. Homar was very gracious to give me full access to the office very early on, and so I've actually been up there for longer than the week and a half that I've actually been the title holder, but I've been up there for a few months with the office, visiting with them, learning how the system worked, learning what the needs are. It became fairly apparent to me why he had made these requests, particularly for the assistant in the victim witness program. You know, in the state of Wyoming this year, 13 counties have new prosecuting chiefs in their offices. Some of that was due to retirement, but in at least 8 of those counties, it was due to a hostile takeover, like happened here in Laramie County.
Hostile takeover.
I don't know what the issues were in the other counties, but I can tell you that the number one issue from speaking to voters here in Laramie County was that victims did not feel like their voice was being heard in the system. And I think that certainly they have a right to have their voice heard, even if it wasn't a statutory right, as we have here in Wyoming. Certainly it's an ethical right that we have as prosecutors and as a government to make sure that victims' rights, you know, they have the right to speak and have their voice heard during the criminal proceedings. This is one of my number one issues, is make sure that occurs here in Laramie County. We have a difficulty doing so with the two paid staff members that we have down in the office. One of them is a full-time position paid through the state, and the other one is a grant position, which we have to apply for regularly and is not necessarily always going to be there. In looking at the cases that I've been able to look at in the week and a half that I've been the district attorney, it becomes pretty obvious that it's very hard for those two individuals to reach out to every single victim that we have with the caseloads that we deal here with Laramie County. And I don't know how we fix that with just two people. Now, one of the things that we are doing at the beginning of the year, we hired in a new gal who comes from a jurisdiction where they have progressive volunteer program, and we're going to work on expanding a volunteer program. We currently, I think, have one volunteer here in Laramie County, but we're going to try to get a bunch more volunteers to help us out down there in victim services. But even with that, you're going to need an additional person to help manage the volunteers and make sure the job is actually getting done. And so when I look at this budget request for the victim witness assistant, I think that of any of the requests we have, this is the one that I would highlight as being in the most need for the jurisdiction here. And when you look at Natrona County, which is really the only other county you can compare us to, since they're the only other district attorney's office in the state, they do have three people, and they have a similar caseload to what we have, and they have the same need that we have here in Laramie County. And so I don't want to say that they have one, so we need one too, but I think that they have one because there's that need, and we have that same need. When we look at the second request here for the legal assistant position, this goes back to victims. This position is not a new position per se. This person already exists in the office. This person is being paid out of our 900 series on contract. This person deals primarily with victims of domestic violence and violent crimes. We are able to do it on contract because the individual we were able to find to fill that position happens to be retired law enforcement. They don't need the benefits that a full-time position would need. They don't need some of the other options that a full-time position would need. But this is subject to sundown. For instance, if we end up having to use our 900 series for other things, like going to trial and so forth, we wouldn't have the money to pay this position. And assumably, at some point, this individual is going, he is retired, he's going to move on. And then would we be lucky enough to find an individual in a similar circumstance who could come in and do that for the office? And I don't know that we could. So that's why we're asking for this position to be fully funded as a permanent position within the office. This isn't, like I said, a new position. We're already paying for it to a certain degree. We're just asking to make it permanent within the budget.
Just a quick question on your reference to, so your total staff in your office is it's 20 employees, looking at that's what you're.
That's about right.
You know, when I look at Natrona County, I think it's 19, and you guys are real similar, and I'm just wondering if they've got three in this victims services support. You've got two, you got one extra employee than Natrona County. I'm just wondering if it's an administrative thing, you move folks around. I mean, it's about priorities. What do you think about that? Or is it caseload similar or maybe?
Well, I think that the criminal statistics for Laramie County are higher in that we just have more crime being reported and investigated here in Laramie County. When you look at the crime per population, Campbell County has the highest in the state, Natrona County has the second highest, and then Laramie County is the third highest. And we're talking about a fractional percent difference between those rankings. Mm-hmm. When you look at the population, then the numbers are higher here than any place else. When you look at the cases going through the system between here and Natrona County, I would say they're similar in terms of numbers. But when we start comparing the complexity of the cases, I could do 50 misdemeanor shoplifting cases for every aggravated battery that we do. And so I haven't done the breakdown to look to see, are we comparing numbers of shoplifting or are we comparing numbers of aggravated batteries? I do know that the more complex crimes here in Wyoming have increased over the last 8 years. I know that because I ran on some of those issues. And here in particular, Laramie County, they've gone up. Burglary has gone up by 10%. Aggravated batteries have gone up by almost 60% in Laramie County. Our juvenile caseload has more than doubled. And domestic violence has gone up by about 50% in that same time frame. So these are all very complex cases. And so, again, I can't compare apples to apples because I don't know what those numbers are up in Natrona County, but I can say that the more complex crimes have gone up by a good bit over the last 8 years.
Representative Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And, Jeremiah, have you sat down and had the conversation with the folks in Natrona County comparing caseloads, comparing workloads of what your personnel do and why you need one more employee than they have? And obviously, if you get another employee, they're going to come ask us for another one. And so there's going to be a trickle-down effect.
Sure.
So I, to me, I don't know how we can make a decision in a realistic manner without knowing what you're just talking about, how many are felonies or how many are complicated. We need to know straight caseloads, but we also need to know the type of cases involved, what makes you different than them, and what administratively they do differently. Obviously, if they have three victims coordinators, that means that they put a higher priority on that because and then we'd also like to know are they paid less? Are they compared to you having one more attorney on staff or whatever that other position is? What makes because your budgets are pretty close to each other, but with one extra employee. So those are I think, answers that we need to know for us to make an educated decision.
Sure.
And then the other thing, Mr. Chairman, is because you're new to the process, this is a supplemental budget. And so typically we don't want to provide extra supplemental budget requests unless there's an emergency. And so then the question is, well, what's different now than a year ago? And obviously you may not know the answer to that. But those are the questions that we need to know, is why don't you bring this in a regular budget session? What makes it so important now that you have to have it versus the regular budgetary process?
Fair enough. And to go back and answer your first question, I have not had that conversation with Mr. Blonigan in Attorney County to know what the operational differences are between his office and my office. I can talk to you about how my office runs. I think I have a fairly good grasp of it at this point in time. We have a clerical position, legal assistant, one legal assistant per each two attorneys. And so I don't know if they were able to get away with one legal assistant per three attorneys. I know that in the county system where I worked at before, we typically had one legal assistant per every one attorney. So you know, if we're going to start comparing different ways that things are rented across the state, then you know, we're going to really get into a mucky muck, I think. But the question then becomes, what is that individual doing? Are they just doing paperwork filing? Are they actually preparing paperwork? Are they answering the phones and setting your calendar? You know, we could really break it down to try to figure out what the individual is doing, and I don't know that we're ever going to get a fair comparison in the way that we might want.
And
okay, Reverend Nicholas.
And just as a follow-up question, then with regards to the Victims Compensation Fund,
sure.
Do you receive funds for through that, or you administrate some of those funds to distribute to victims, but none of that goes
correct
for administrative purposes or for staffing? You know?
Go ahead, and when you answer, we want to always make sure and work through the chairman so we never have any personal kind of...
Sure. Mr. Chairman, no, through you, no.
No, yeah.
Yeah, and Mr. Chairman, I'm curious about that because I noticed there's about $3.5-4 million in that fund right now, and there are requests to have it administered. But it seems to me that at some point in time, if we continue to increase the staffing needs for victims' compensation assistance, then instead of being a direct appropriation from the general budget, we ought to figure out a funding mechanism for it other than through the legislature on general funds. So.
And that is a question. Do you agree?
Yeah.
Sure.
We generally don't make comments. We try to do questions. But, yeah. Okay, good. Any other questions? Oh, Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I apologize for being late, and part of the explanation that I heard is these services are currently being rendered under the 900 series through contracting with professional services. So if the legislature agreed to this funding increase, would or should there be a corresponding decrease in the amount of money given to the 900 series?
I think that we would be able to return money.
That through the chair. Oh. Just simply say, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, yeah. I think that the answer would be that at the end of the year, we would be able to then return money in the 900 series, and at the next budgetary session, we would be able to address whether or not that series needed to be reduced, but I would anticipate yes.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Follow-up?
Would it be the entire amount or a portion of it? Or I'm running into the same problem that Representative Nicholas is if this is working the way it is now, why do we want to change this as part of a supplemental budget instead of just gearing it for the regular budget next year?
Okay, go ahead.
Well, now, going back to the legal assistant position, again, I think through you, Mr. Chairman, yeah, that again, my concern is that the individual in that position will not remain there, and it will be very difficult to get somebody else to come into that position. That's why we're asking for the supplemental budget request, and I guess on an emergency basis, in that I'm anticipating that individual will not remain in that position through the end of the year. And I haven't noted yet as to priority three. We're not even going to request that at this point, so you can strike that from the budget. So we're just focusing on priority one and priority two. Going back to priority one, I think the thing that has changed that would make this more of an emergency is the fact that we did have an election. The voters here really feel like their voice is not being heard. And I've seen cases now where their voice wasn't heard. They just didn't get contacted. We haven't been doing what we're supposed to be doing. And that's very concerning to me. And part of that is because we haven't had the staff.
Go ahead, Senator Ross, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Co-Chair.
Well, Mr. District Attorney, in just looking at the 2015-2016 biennial budget requests and comparing District 1, your district, and District 7, you already receive approximately $300,000 more than District 7. District 7 has 19 employees, and you have 20. I mean, there seems to be, so I'm asking you, I mean, they seem to be able to get their work done and get their victims contacted. What is your office not doing apparently they could do for with less?
Go ahead, Mr. District Attorney.
Through you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, if we compare caseload, I'm not sure, and I don't know there's anybody tracking how many of these crimes have victims versus how many don't. I can tell you that in domestic violence, there is always a victim. I could tell you in a speeding ticket, there usually isn't. And I don't know if there's any way to track a crime of, you know, possession, for instance, where there's no victim other than the state and society, to a crime where we have an identified victim who needs compensation, who needs to, potentially have medical treatment, who's going to be coming to us and want to make a statement at trial or at sentencing. But it sure seems to me like we have, with this much higher domestic violence caseload at least, more identified victims that we have to deal with.
You know, in your handout, I think there's, and it might not be in, I know it's on SharePoint, but I think there is some comparison of that. Maybe we can get these, I think, members, it's on your handout and it's on SharePoint, and I just found it, so it's not like a, this line of questioning, some of those comparisons to District 1 and District 7. So I think that's in your box. It has all the 900 series, 6900 series. It's the last page, domestic violence cases.
Mina.
We'll just take a minute and let everybody.
Mr. Chairman, can you
Senator Burns,
can you hold up the thing so we know what to look for?
Oh, absolutely. Yes,
thank
Senator,
you.
It's in your. This is the last page.
But we've got a bunch of handouts.
The front page looks simply like this.
Got it. Thank you.
And it's actually agency. It says it's handout number 58. And the way we number these, it'll have the agency number 151, and then it's below it stamped there, number 58.
That's all right.
That's amazing. Yeah, we're good. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Nicholas.
Thank you. And Jeremiah, going to this, mm-hmm. the graph for domestic violence, you know, it looks to me like if you go by this graph, you have roughly 400 less domestic violence cases than you did 2 years ago. And wouldn't that not suggest that you would have less need for a victim's coordinator by 400 cases over 2 years ago?
Mr. Chairman, if I may.
Yeah, go ahead.
First of all, I think this graph, we didn't make this graph go back far enough. If you go back to 2004 and compare that to 2013, we would see a 50% increase in domestic violence crimes. When we look at 2014, that's only for three-fourths of the year. And for whatever reason, maybe it's the holidays, I don't know, but the fourth quarter is always the busiest time for domestic violence. People get home with the family, and they get a little cabin fever, maybe, I don't know, but that's when they shoot up. So we are missing that third or that fourth quarter, and I think that once we add that in, once we get those numbers, we'll see a very comparable, at least to 2013, and hopefully not to 2012.
And then just a follow-up.
Okay, go ahead,
Mr. Chairman. A follow-up on that issue, and I spoke with you briefly before that in our last session,
mm-hmm.
and when Mr. Homar was here and having discussions about why the differences in the number of domestic violence cases between Natrona County and Laramie County, his response was because Laramie County is a lot more aggressive about making arrests and just being aggressive towards dealing with domestic violence on a case-by-case basis than Natrona County. So my question is that your understanding, or do you have or you've had discussions about that issue with either Natrona County or with the law enforcement here on how that, you know, trying to understand what those differences are?
Sure. Mr. Chairman, I have had discussions with local law enforcement, and one of my comments to them was I wanted to make sure that they knew they had discretion in these sorts of cases, that they didn't have to charge every time they went out into the field. And the response was, yeah, we know that. So I don't think that they're charging every case that they're called out on. But one of the difficulties in a domestic violence situation is if you send one party to this corner and you send another party to that corner and you leave as law enforcement, and then one of the parties decides to go grab a weapon and shoot up the place, it's not a good thing for you. And so I don't know if, you know, because I haven't talked to law enforcement up in Natrona County, if they are sending people to the corners more than we do. But I can tell you that if you ever have one of those events, unfortunately, we haven't had one for a while down here. You're getting a lot of press on that. Why weren't we more proactive? And so if it is that we're more proactive, then I think that that's a good thing. The other thing that I think, and I did have a conversation with Mr. Homar about this before I took office, is that we do have more victim advocacy groups down here for domestic violence than Natrona County has. And so I believe that there's more public awareness about this, and that we just have higher reporting than they do up there as well.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. And just, I have a question about the position that the legal assistant position you say that you're currently paying with the 900 series. And it is going into these handouts, is it correct that he makes about $35,000 a year?
Mr. Chairman, that's about right.
And then on your funding request, which is for one biennium or for 1 year, you're moving that up to $97,000. So is that correct? Am I reading that right?
Mr. Chairman, and of course, that a large portion of that would be for the benefits that would need to be associated with that position. And the salary is, I think, at the top range for the classification, but would not necessarily have to be that much in terms of what we actually paid.
But we're appropriating for the full amount if we appropriate on the budget, so that means you'll have the money, you receive the funds, right?
I suppose so. And no, I just, again, would highlight that I don't think that would be necessary. We're not requesting that at this time.
You have, you know, on some of these questions, if you find out any more comparisons or those things might be helpful to us, please send it to us. And don't anticipate any callbacks, but appreciate it, and best wishes in your new position.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Okay, next up is Agency 4, State Treasurer. And welcome, Mr. Treasurer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And you know we're live and recorded on the Internet. The JAC is back in action here. And so if you would just introduce yourselves for the record, and the floor is yours.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mark Gordon, State Treasurer. With me today is Deputy Treasurer Sharon Garland. And I'm here today to discuss with you the supplemental budget request we have. I thought what I'd do is give you an overview, and then I'll let Sharon walk you through the specifics. You should have two handouts that we provided, public fund compensation analysis from 2010, which was done by R.V. Coons, and one done more recently by McLagan for the pension fund, which is public fund compensation analysis 2012. And these will indicate some of the salary ranges that we're talking about here today. Just for a sake of overview, in the past 2 years, my office has been thinking very strongly about how we could reorganize ourselves to be more efficient. We have undertaken the Baldrige process, which is a process to establish measures so that we can actually give you the sense of our performance in executing all of our jobs. It's hard, for example, for an accountant who has to be perfect to demonstrate their progress towards being perfect when they have to be perfect all the time. So that process has been going on, and you will see next year that I'm going to be coming to you with a request for our office. Why we are doing this in a supplemental budget, as many of you know, that the longtime CIO for Wyoming, Michael Wald Newman, who did a phenomenal job for the state, took our funds from about $6 billion when he was first employed up to about 18 and change in December of last year. Found that he could get a job in Nebraska for the investment council there for roughly twice what we could pay here. And I think he explained to me at one point in our conversations about retaining him, he said, I feel like I have lost about $400,000 in the last few years, and I think that's an important thing for me to do for my family. We wish him well. It's a good move for him, and we certainly understand that. The challenge that the Treasurer's Office has is that along with Michael's departure, we also lost all of the history, all of the relationships, and many of the pertinent discussions that he had with our managers. He did a good job of transferring some of those to me and sharing those with Sharon Garland, and we have he's put together a very remarkable staff, and we are functioning. But if we are going to get a CIO who is going to be able to help us manage all of these accounts, and I know that we should probably have some discussion about what that detail of that job is, that we're going to have to pay in this range. The average that we have, and you can see this in the materials we presented to you, is around $250,000 for a CIO position. That is a substantial fee, particularly for anybody in Wyoming, particularly for any state employee. And let me just make a comment that state employees, particularly the employees that I have had the joy of working with, are phenomenally committed individuals. They are competent. They work hard. And they work very, very long hours. You can see in our office the lights are on from about 5:30 to well after dark. And we have a series of tasks that we do. For example, because of the IT issues that we have, we have to run essentially four sets of books to make sure that we're completely accurate every single day. This is something the auditor's office and we are working on to rectify in coming years so that we can make that a much more efficient process. But the reason why we are here today is to present to you really, and they're all priority one, but let me just say that I've ranked them. First and foremost is the CIO. Then below that, for the staff building out, and there's a reason why we want to build the staff out, and that primarily is to build stability into the system for the long haul. My primary objective over the next 4 years is to make sure the state of Wyoming is well represented on the investment, in its investment capacity, that capacity is stable, and then we recognize that people leave from time to time. So that is why you see a CIO and three senior investment officers. First and foremost, though, a CIO is extremely important for us. We want to be able to compete to hire the best and the brightest. Secondly, we have two positions that are currently vacant. You know, we've carried these positions as vacant. We want to upgrade those. And then thirdly, we have another position, which is really my fourth priority. But with your leave, Mr. Chairman, what I would offer is for Sharon to walk you through the detail, and then we'll stand for any questions.
Okay, please do.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, I'm Sharon Garland, the Deputy State Treasurer. On our budget request on page 3 is a summary of what we are requesting. This would be under the manager payment code 0600, which is our investment division. And we're requesting $665,250, and that's for salaries and fringe benefits. The funding would come from special revenue funds, which are our investment income, and we are requesting one position. If you'll turn to page 11.
Now, just before we, Sharon, that is a one-year number.
Mr. Chairman, that is about a 15-month number.
Oh, it is. So
it is a 15-month number.
Yeah.
What we were looking at, if you turn to page 11, I can kind of walk through that a little bit.
You're talking
more.
11 of the budget.
11 of the supplemental budget request.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Burkhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Treasurer Gordon, just back up for a moment. You said that money was coming out of the 600 series. I'm just curious why it isn't coming out of just normal operations of the 100 series.
Well, go ahead, if you want to answer it, but Sharon, why don't you on all these salaries?
Mr. Chairman, it's not the 600 series. That is the 600, it's 0600. That's the division number, not the series number. It is series one, the 100 series.
Okay. Representative Connolly.
Up in the same vein, where are salaries coming out of right now,
Mr. Chairman? In the investment division, the salaries are from investment income.
Mr. Chair, follow up. And what about the chief officer?
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, representative, the CIO. All of the positions that we're requesting are in the investment division, so all of the funds do come from investment income for those salaries.
And have been? Yeah. Okay.
Hey, and really, I mean, you can call it what you want, but, I mean, we could do it one of two ways. We could take all these returns and take them to the general fund and pay your salaries out of the general fund, or we intercept them before they hit the general fund. I mean, this has an effect on the general fund. There's no doubt about it. It's a $600,000 hit to the general fund. So,
Mr. Chairman, that is correct.
Okay.
On page 11, what you'll see there are the four positions that we're looking at. The first one, position 0002, is the chief investment officer. And you can see on the right side, the current salary is at about $125,000. We're requesting that the annual salary be increased to $250,000. The salary that we need for the balance of the biennium, it would be the 162,732, that column. And again, that's for 15 months because we would anticipate that we would want to hire these positions as soon as the session is over as early as April 1 or no later than April 1st. And the benefits that are tied to those salaries are shown in the next column and the total amount that we're requesting for each of those positions. As Treasurer Gordon indicated, the second priority on his list is position, we skipped position 19, but 0021, that is currently a position that is in the Treasurer's office that is vacant within the investment area. We would want to rewrite the position description. With that position, we're looking at an annual salary of $152,000. It's currently vacant at a position of $89,000. The third one we'd be looking at is a new position.
I look just 1 second, Sharon. You said 0019 is vacant. Is that what you said?
Mr. Chairman,
it's
no.
0021.
Mr. Chairman, I apologize. Position 0021 is vacant.
Okay,
The top one, 0002, is vacant. 0019 is not vacant. 0021 is vacant. And L001 is a new position that we're requesting.
Okay. Thank you. Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Matt. So on the vacancies, how long have they been vacant?
Mr. Chairman, the CIO has only been vacant since December. Position 21 has been vacant several years.
Okay. So, Mr. Chairman,
go ahead.
When we get down below, when you did your summary and you kind of netted some of this out, did you take the fact that salary has been or how does that work, I guess, Mr. Chairman? Since this is coming out of the fund, I mean, ultimately that salary hasn't been expended. Was the full biennial salary deducted against the 15-month salary when you get to your net number?
Mr. Chairman, this particular page does not do that.
But you did it later?
Right.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
So just to drill on that so I understand, so this 0021 that's been vacant for several years, you have not because we have agencies that will take 100 series money and apply it to other positions to increase the salary of those positions. So that's not being used on any other position or anything like that?
Mr. Chairman, it's not being used in total on other positions. What happens sometimes is if there are positions that, you know, they authorize a pay increase, we don't necessarily get general funds in this category to give those raises that maybe the legislature authorizes. So occasionally you do use the 100 series for those sorts of things. They look and see if we have money there first before we would actually receive anything else.
Okay. Senator Wasserberger, I've been wanting to say that for a long time. Used to always be Representative Wasserberger.
And you know what? When I first heard that, I thought, that's not me, is it? But it is. Hey, Mr. Chairman, and I haven't been in the legislature for 6 years, and so I was never on appropriations, but this is my first time on appropriations, so I thought that the way to go about this was to read the budget from last year. And one of the things that my question is, reading your statement, it says approximately 97.6% or $16.2 billion of the state's assets were invested by external investment managers for both equities and fixed income, while 2.4% or approximately $402 million or $400 million was managed internally by your staff. So can you explain that to me? I mean, you're asking for an additional salary increase, but it sounds like to me we're having outside investors do it for us. Am I wrong on that?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Wasserberger, if I may. We do two types of fees, and last year they amounted to about $51 million in total that were external manager fees. That is still very cheap, particularly compared to any of our peers. But each of our managers has a contractual arrangement with us, and they report to us what they've done. It is our job to make sure that we balance their trades, that we make sure that they're not, and we do a significant amount of asset allocation, because the way the state's portfolio is constructed is we have an asset allocation devoted across a spectrum of types of investments. And if one does particularly well, this is a little counterintuitive, they get us out of alignment on that asset allocation. It is our job to therefore look at that, figure out how we want to retract that investment so they're back within that asset allocation range, and make sure that that's deployed elsewhere. This is a very time-consuming task. We have, four people that work on this in our office on a regular basis. Those external management fees are captured two ways. There are direct fees that we pay for those services, and then there are some that are net of fees that we also do. It's about roughly a half and half arrangement, the net of fee arrangements and the direct fees. So we do also have about $1 billion in our internal bond portfolio, and we have other assets that we run internally as well.
Thank you. Any follow-up? Okay. Mr. Co-Chair?
Thank you. Mr. Treasurer, taking a look at your request here, if we were to pass the constitutional amendment that allow you to invest other funds, are you anticipating any additional need for a positions to help manage those investments?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ross, Mr. Co-Chairman, I don't anticipate. The approach we're trying to take here is to build out an office for a $20 billion plus dollar standard fund, to build stability into it, to be able to capture some efficiencies. Senator Wassenberg just brought up Wassenberger.
Wasserberger. Forever.
just brought up the point of management fees, and there are potentially some efficiencies we can achieve by being able to bring. So we have a mix of different strategies, some of which are quote unquote passive strategies. So you pick an index, say the Standard & Poor's 500, and the objective of the manager is to make sure that he has the selection of stocks that might be in the Standard & Poor's 500, and they run it passively. It's cheap, but we currently pay for that. We could bring that in-house. That could achieve substantial savings for us. But those are the types of things we can do. But to answer your question directly, no. This is the point of this is to be able to have a platform by which not only can we go from $20 to $30 billion, which I hope we are able to do to provide the state the needs that it has, but not do it with additional staff.
Mr. Chairman?
Hey, go ahead. Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Treasurer, going back to the little follow-up on Senator Wasserberger's train of thought, I was wondering, Mr. Chairman, when we look at this, if you could ultimately we have my recollections, we probably have 100 to 200 different external money managers. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Perkins, no, it's more like probably 35.
It's 35, anyway. And Mr. Chairman, in following that up, if I can, ultimately that 35, but do any of those 35 understand the complete investment strategy that the state of Wyoming is employing?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Perkins, no, they may have some inkling of what we're trying to do, but they run their program within the constructs of the contract that we provide for them. You know, for instance, if they're a small cap manager, they're going to deal with small cap, or if they're a bond manager, they're going to deal with bonds and do the best job we've hired them to do. They have a style or a particular performance record or a way they do things, that's what we want them to do. The way that we have the asset allocation is, as I know I'm telling you things you already know, but it's to make sure that If we have an unintended something that happens that we aren't anticipating, that we are well protected against a lot of asset classes. So we do all the balancing internally.
Right. Mr. Chairman, one final up. And so, I mean, what we're doing with the investment staff that we're trying to build out here is what you, I think what you're telling us is that this is the person who, between the State Loan and Investment Board and your office, that they're the ones that execute and maintain and carry out the investment strategy as a whole. And so even though we have external money managers, this is the guy or the gal that oversees that and helps make sure that the strategy is carried out among all the different types and forms of investment we have. Wouldn't you agree?
Mr. Chairman, Councillor Perkins, yes.
What was Michael Walton Newman's salary when he left?
Mr. Chairman, on page 11, you will see current salary. It was $124,598, about $125,000.
So we're looking to double that, basically.
Mr. Chairman, that is correct.
I had a little bit of a technical problem when I was typing notes when you were going through that, and I just want to it's L001 is the new position, and 0021 is the one that has been open for years.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Nicholas.
Thank you. Just a couple different questions. Going to your salary summary statistical comparison, none of those have a, you know, do I see the figure 250,000? So where did you come up with that number? And I'm guessing it came up from the retirement board as just a close guess. But just how did you come up with that number?
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nicholas, that number was anecdotal from Becky Gratzinger in a meeting that we had. You'll notice that these two salaries surveys are old. They're not stale, but they are old. One is from 2012, and one is from 2010. Her exact comment to me was the average median salary in the Rocky Mountains is $250,000.
And, Mr. Chairman, when you say average, how do we know what we're comparing to? It's hard for me to discern that from looking at the documents. And I mean, different funds obviously are managed differently and paid differently. So, I mean, are we talking about state treasurer, CIOs who happen to have managed funds similar to this, or are we talking about retirement centers that just are public funds over $6 billion, or can you explain that, please?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nicholas, the range of salary structures, compensation schemes, et cetera, are quite vast. You know, there are incentive programs that are at play and a number of others. In this case, these are public funds. In both of these cases, in the one case of R.V. Kuhn's, they are over $5 billion. And in the case of the McLagan study, you'll see that they break between larger funds above $40 billion and below $40 billion.
And could you just define public funds? I mean, that's...
Would include pension funds. Mr. Chairman. Representative Nichols, they would include pension funds, they would include sovereign funds, they would include state funds.
And, Mr. Chairman, then on the next follow-up, it's curious to me that you're kind of loading the gun, the ammunition before the gun goes off for quite a ways. You have a vacant position that you haven't filled for 2 years plus, and you want a brand new position, and you want to raise all the fees for everybody all at one time. And to me, the sequence of that doesn't make sense. Other than what you've told us that you just want to get ready for the future, I mean, why wasn't the position filled 2 years ago, the vacant position, and so that's more of a stepped process to get to where you want to go?
Go ahead, sir.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nicholas, You know, I mentioned to you that we've been working for 2 years to try to figure out a redesign of our office to make it more efficient. I wouldn't want to come to this body without having a metric that could say, look, we deserve it. That's why we started the Baldrige program. The reason we didn't fill that position is exactly the reason I stated when I first spoke to this body about a month and a half after I was appointed, which is we want to keep that position. I'm not sure how we want to reconfigure the office, but that is a position that I want to keep in the opportunity to really think about how we're going to build this office out. If you look at the standard sort of set of funds that are our ilk, they have staffing minimally around two. There are many different schemes, I guess you can talk about, of how these things are managed, but the typical office would be anywhere from 2 to 10. To me, I think the way we've tried to outline it is we want to have a CIO that will have responsibilities that will deal with this body. We'll also talk about the very things that Senator Perkins was talking about, rebalancing. Also work with a committee that I'm hoping to establish that will constantly and report quarterly on the risk that we have in the portfolio so that we don't rely as heavily on the consultants we have, that we still rely on them, but that we also have an internal capacity, and that we have particular expertise for bonds, which is a distinct discipline from equities, which is also a distinct discipline from alternatives. And in that alternatives bucket, I guess we have a whole raft of Wyoming types of investments, the IDBs, various other types of investments that we would put into that capacity, which we don't currently have staff to be able to analyze. I understand why it would seem, why were we trying to do this all of a sudden? It has been a program we have thought about for some time. Frankly, last year, Sharon and I began working on what we were planning to present in a year's time, which would be a pretty substantial revision of the office.
Okay, are you finished, Representative Nicholas?
Just one quick other question. Then when you hire these new folks, is the start your plan to be like the starting salary for the CIO to be $250,000, and so after 2 years and pay raises, he's going to be at 260 or 270?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nicholas, I think what I'm asking for here is the capacity to be able to hire up to that level. We have not gone out for search. We don't know who we're going to net. It is not my intention to go to that full salary. That's not what I intend to advertise at.
Representative Greer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Treasurer Gordon, I'm just trying to get my mind around a couple of, you know, the nomenclatures or the titles. And I guess so I'm looking at the Coons report or study here. And, you know, so I guess I'm envisioning a chief investment officer, somebody is really making investment decisions and taking that risk on. And then I drop down and I see someone who's entitled or who is titled a director of asset allocation and risk management, which, from what I was hearing, not being as familiar as everybody else, is kind of what we're looking at. So if you can remember that question or those comments, what I also heard from you maybe is that if we have a CIO with the qualifications, that he might be managing some of these passive investments, you know, just having an allocation to Fortune 500 companies or whatever the case may be, would that not net then some savings of what we're paying to the outside investors? So two long, complicated questions. I apologize.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Greer, I think the answer to the second one was pretty simple. That's our hope, and indeed very much so. I think that it is possible that we can be able to bring back in-house maybe some of the passive. But we wouldn't want to do that without expertise to do that. Ideally it would be great if we could count on just anybody to do that. But I think we want to have a certain amount of experience, a certain amount of education before we turn over any of that to an in-house manager. To answer your other question, the position title you see here, the Director of Asset Allocation and Risk Management, is really a junior sort of position. And we're not looking for a junior kind of position. We're looking really for a CIO. And I guess what I'm saying is that between treasurers and between years, we want to have the ability to communicate effectively to the legislature. But more importantly, we want to have somebody who has a very solid sense of how investments work, how they can be classified, how they perform, weaknesses that we might see, an understanding of the types of investments that we have and where they are. And that's a different set of skills from simply looking at a chart and saying, well, this manager is a little bit high, this one's a little bit low. We're going to do a change there. We want to have somebody that can go with some familiarity to, if it's an emerging market fund or a real estate fund, to have some real knowledge about both of those types of investments.
Okay, Mr. Co-Chair.
Mr. Treasurer, as one who's new to this whole process, my understanding, and a series of questions, Mr. Chairman, that when we mention other funds, it's actually these positions would be paid out of the investment earnings. Is that right?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Co-Chairman, yes.
And am I understanding your testimony that by doing this, we could actually, over the longer haul, potentially save money because we would be utilizing our own people to do the work, such that our investment earnings, there may be a net wash or it could be a gain? Am I?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Co-Chairman, that would be the hope. I am not going to make that promise. It depends on who we have and how we approach it.
Senator Wasserberger.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Going back to this budget from last year, there's some terms in here that I was going to ask you just for my own education, but I'd never heard of it before. What are non-negotiable debenture bonds? What are those? I don't even know if I pronounced it right.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not quite certain which page you're referring to, but...
Mr. Chairman, that's page 21. Yeah, that's what I'm looking at.
And we're probably looking at, oh, here we are.
Yeah. Okay.
Page 21.
Some of the farm loans, for example, that the state invests in, the mechanism that is used for those is a non-negotiable debenture bond. So what really happens is you can't really give a loan to an individual. The state cannot do that constitutionally. But what they do is the State Loan and Investment Board actually issues a non-negotiable debenture bond, and the state treasurer purchases that as a bond and then gives the money to the SLIB, basically, the Office of State Lands and Investments, and then they actually write the mortgages and issue the loans to the individuals.
Okay. Go ahead. Turn your mic on, if you would.
Mr. Chairman, just following up, thank you for that, because I think we had that discussion on the Senate floor
Chairman,
a little bit.
Mr. Chairman, one comment of clarification on that point.
Sure. Go ahead.
And just... And so the non-negotiable part means that no, the treasurer has to hold those until maturity or until there's a default and there's a repossession or something. But the non-negotiable means that they're not going to be sold off. No, they can't be sold off to anybody else. Wouldn't you agree?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Perkins, that's correct.
Okay. Go ahead.
And Mr. Chairman, just one last question.
In the previous budget we were looking at the Wyoming Star program. And on that page, you guys list professional fees for $250,000.
Mr. Chairman, can Senator Wasserberger tell us what page he's looking at?
That's page 29.
Mr. Chairman, again, what we would be doing is paying the money managers. Those are money manager fees. We're paying money managers to...
Okay, and that's a much smaller fund. That's a $1.4 million fund, apparently. I don't know. I mean...
Mr. Chairman, if I may, Senator Wasserberger, yeah. WyoStar is a very specific fund. It's for local governments. It's overnight money, and we have to have an agreement for the management of those coming in and coming out. But it's a pretty straightforward but much smaller fund.
Okay. Any other questions, Representative Conley?
Mr. Treasurer, I'm curious, in the handout that you gave us on the third page, although it has page 12 on the top, and it has public fund CIO pay, and there are these unearned bonuses and earned bonuses, and then at the end there is a total salary. So I'm curious if the positions that you're listing here, if those folks also get unearned bonuses and earned bonuses.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Connolly, we don't anticipate that. There may be some constitutional issues precluding us from offering bonuses.
Mr. Chair, follow up. Yeah. Do you do it now?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Connolly, no.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Any other questions of the Treasurer? Representative Nicholas.
Thank you. And just so I understand it, by hiring the two new positions, they're not going to be managing equity funds or fixed income funds. They're going to be managing or overseeing the 34, 35 management companies and how they invest their monies following their management style practices, and if they're the best folks for the best management policies and procedures that the state wants. Is that, am I accurate about that? In other words, you're not going to have guys downstairs managing a $1 billion fund.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nicholas, in fact, we do have already in-house a bond fund that is approaching $1 billion. That is ours and that we run. But to answer your question more directly, I think the notion here is pretty much what you describe, but we want to be able to have the capacity to really drill down deeply into each of the managers. We have, for example, many of you may have seen that Bill Gross left PIMCO last year, and a tremendous amount of market noise accompanied that event. There was a lot of concern about this enormous personality and what that would do to the fund of PIMCO. And correspondingly, since he was brought on by another company, what that would do to that fund and whether we ought to be thinking about that. We want to have the capacity to be able to understand the depth of the commitment from the various managers that we have, the depth of the bench, and whether they're actually still doing what they represent that they're doing. These people change on a regular basis. They're hired because of their talent. So we want to have that capacity in-house. And we do rely on RVK, and there are other consultants. I think the pension fund uses New England Pension Consultants. We have worked very hard, which is new, I am given to believe, to make sure that we test against each other, both the pension fund and us, so that the risk associated with both of those programs is at least tested within our own agencies, if you will. But consultants have their limitations. And so we don't want to have to rely that much on the consultants. We want to use them as we need. But we want to have that capacity in-house to know
you know, that our $19 billion market value fund is not at risk.
And a couple of different follow-ups on that, Mr. Chairman. But number one, let's say you're paying a senior investment officer $152,000. In the real marketplace, according to your graph, he might be making $500,000 or $600,000. So how are you going to get the quality people when you're still paying a third under the private market share? And then my other question was, could you – I think your – what I saw looked like you had about $400 million that was under investment, which and now you said it's about $1 billion. So just could you describe to me what that bond fund is and how it's managed? And
Go ahead, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, it's run by it's run by Dinah Walter in our office, has been for a number of years. And I'm looking at our chart here and trying to internal. Yeah, you're right. I'm sorry. I misrepresented that. It's about $450,000. The other chart I looked at was a little bit higher than that.
And, Mr. Chairman, is that short-term bond trading funds that you manage with cash, or is it long-term investment income on bond type?
It's a full-fledged bond portfolio.
And then going back to my earlier question about it, you know, if you want really good investment advice, you need to pay $500,000, don't you, and not $150,000?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nicholas, I think that what we're talking about here is to try to find a good balance. There, I don't believe, is a direct correlation between money paid to a manager and performance delivered by a manager. So finding the good balance is the challenge. We do want to be able to fish in the pond, and that's really what we're trying to do. We understand, too, just to follow up, Mr. Chairman and Representative Nicholas, part of the issue here and part of the reason why we're constructing it the way we are is because we understand that the public funds and government funds are launching pads for many talented individuals. We want to be able to absorb the turnover that comes. Frankly, when you look at Michael Newman's tenure here, it's an extraordinary accomplishment for the state. He stayed here because of a love for the state and a number of other aspects to the job. But we want to be able to allow for people to improve themselves without losing our program at the same time.
Well, and I think, you know, there's a certain point to that. I know we face that in a lot of agencies. You know, revenue, I think there was a point there were about four of those guys. We didn't want them traveling in the same car together to meetings. I mean, they're the only people on the planet that knew some of our mineral taxation. But so any other questions? That's my comment. But well, any other questions? I think Mr. Co-Chair Ross and myself will handle this budget with the rest of our members. Senator Burns, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, again, this is a question that comes from ignorance, just being new on the committee. You mentioned the Baldrige program. What is that? Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Burns, Baldrige program was named after and sort of started by Malcolm Baldrige, who was the Secretary of Commerce under Reagan. It's a national program which attempts to seek the best performance across a number of different skills. So if you're a school, you can apply for a Baldrige. It's an award. If it's a investment firm, you can do it. If it's any number of entities, the idea is to provide the very best management possible. It puts it out for peer review. The peer review comes back and gives you openings for conversation about how you can improve the efficiencies of your program. And it also puts in place metrics. So, for example, in our office, we have divided it out into 9 tasks that have things to do with what's our vision, how are we achieving our vision, you know, that sort of thing. The Baldrige program was the reason why I brought it here is that we put it in place at the Federal Reserve Bank in Kansas City, and it continually improved our performance, and it was a way to internally make sure that we were always seeking a better way of doing business. You can look on the online. That's a fairly complicated website, but we are working through that process right now.
And
Senator Burns?
So the Baldrige program, it's a level of achievement with a level of recognition by I'm still trying to figure out what the context here is for you.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Burns, so there is an award, and it would be great to get the award. There are always national recognitions of schools or hospitals or whatever. That is not the reason necessarily that we are doing it. We are doing it because you provide to the Baldrige community a rubric that has all of your performance measures and your processes in the office and how your command structure works, et cetera, et cetera. And then the Baldrige community, as a community of peers, will review that. And there are certain reviewers that are accredited, and they come back and make helpful suggestions on how you can improve your performance or ways that measures can be better implemented, that sort of thing.
So it's basically a program of peer review.
It is a program of peer review.
Thank you.
Yes.
Okay. Any other questions, members? Anything else you'd like to add?
Well, Mr. Chairman, just to finish up, this is not just public funds. This is across private sector companies. It's the whole echelon of executive functions. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I thank you very much and the committee for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Treasurer. Okay. Okay, members, I think we're next scheduled tomorrow at noon recess. For a Capitol Square update, Don, is that?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. We also have scheduled tomorrow upon adjournment and Friday at noon if the committee desires to have any callbacks. I haven't received any requests for contacting agencies, but would put that to you if you have any.